Welcome to PS Let's Talk Love. I'm Marcia.
And I'm Solveig. We're communication professors and dating and relationship coaches. And in each episode, we'll be talking about dating, love, relationships, and all their complexities.
We're here to help you navigate the sometimes awful, sometimes exhilarating, and oftentimes bonkers elements of all things relationships.
We want to emphasize that this podcast is separate from our teaching and research at our university jobs. It is, however, part of our desire to bring dating and relationship support to folks everywhere.
Let's talk love. Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 50. Oh my gosh, episode 50. Wait, hold on. I didn't really realize
that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. 50 episodes. I guess it's not like a full year yet. 52 should be like a big celebration, maybe.
Yes. And also 50, I like the number 50. And we've been doing this for a year, right? So like I think we just get to celebrate for several weeks on end, I think is what we can do with that. We've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, it's been a whole year. Well, episode 50, this is how we like to start every episode with what we're loving. Solveig, what are you loving this week?
So I've been giving this some thought. And the thing that I want to share this week that I'm super curious what you're feeling around this too, but I think I can guess. But I was thinking, I keep going back to a post that I've been seeing on social media. I think it's like making its rounds. Like it's not brand new, but it's making its rounds. And it's a post with Chelsea Handler, and it is like a day in the life of a childless woman. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Yes. It's like making the rounds. So I was thinking about that because it keeps popping up, and also because I haven't thought about the term childless woman a lot, and probably until I saw that. I mean, I've thought about other concepts, but I haven't necessarily thought about that. And I just kind of love that she's celebrating being a childless woman. I'm curious, what's your response to that? Have you seen it? Do you love it? Do you hate it?
I have seen it. Yeah, I thought it was really funny. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I have been getting a lot of stuff. It's funny that you brought this up today, because on my For You pages, like on TikTok, mostly on TikTok, I have been seeing a lot of like child-free things, like women having conversations about being at various ages and being child-free. In fact, there was a video that I saw that got stitched a lot that was a woman, and I think she was maybe in her late 20s, and she was like, can I hear from like the women who are like in their late 40s or 50s or maybe older who don't have children, and like, what is your life like? Because everyone is telling me it will be shit, and like, there's got to be those people out there anyway. So that had been something circulating on my social media quite a bit. I've been seeing those conversations. And I prefer the term child-free personally, mostly because like for me, it is a choice. It's
right.
And I think that saying it that way implies that choice a little bit more. Saying child-free.
Yeah, it definitely has a better ring to it than childless makes it. I mean, I know that the thing that I was referring to was for humor, right? like she talks about it from a humorous perspective, but it definitely, what is that with words where it frames the positive rather than the negative, kind of, or whatever you call that.
Yeah. Well, the connotation is different, right? Like childless versus child free. Childless implies that something has been taken
missing.
From you. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's missing. Yeah.
Yeah. I have been really enjoying, I mean, I thought that it was funny. I find all of these conversations really interesting. This must be like a threshold moment in society where there's more discussion about this, because I've seen that. There's been a couple conversations that have happened in my class this semester already. I just had a conversation with someone else yesterday about this. Like there's a lot of this must be one of those topics that like is really getting some traction right now is what I'm noticing.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why I just wanted to bring it up because I'm also noticing it. Like I received this newsletter from, I'm signed up for this, you know, one person's newsletter. I can't remember what it's called, but she just changed the title of her newsletter to something like Living Selfish or Still Selfish or something. And it's like her frame is like, I have chosen this life where I don't have children, where I'm super flexible in my life. Or so, I mean, she's again, sort of creating humor out of a choice that she's made. Mm-hmm. But I thought it would be interesting to talk about with you just because I know, you know, we have listeners, I'm sure many who do have children, some who don't have children, who maybe want children, which has been a perspective that I've held, which is why I wanted to talk about it with you. And I also know there's lots of people who likely listen to our podcast who, like you, have made a child-free choice up until this point in an intentional way. So I was curious what it was bringing up for you. And I also want to share a couple of things it's bringing up for me.
Yeah. Well, do you want to share what is it making you feel?
Yeah. Well, first of all, like the Chelsea Handler thing made me laugh. So yeah. That was good. You know, I mean, it's silly. Like for those of you, we'll try to link it in the show notes. But if you haven't seen it, it's like her being like, I start off my day and then I hit snooze and sleep until 12:30. And then I wake up and what is she like, go get a croissant in Paris. And then I climb Mount Everest. Like, it's like very exaggerated, certainly the kind of freedom that a person might have. But it's made me think a bit lately, even just last night, my sister called me back. And for those of you who don't know, my sister has a young daughter right now. She's I guess like a year and a half, maybe almost two. And my sister called me and this was just last night. And she was like, oh, what are you up to? And I was like, well, I've just been sitting here journaling, which was true. Like I had just been sitting there journaling and like reflecting on some things. And she was like, oh, cool. And she started to talk. And then her daughter immediately started crying and like clearly wants to nurse. And my niece. And she was like, it was like, it just became clear that we weren't going to be able to have a conversation in that moment. And so it was the point is it was a short conversation. It was like a 3-minute conversation where my sister was like, well, I guess I'm not going to be able to talk to you right now. Have fun journaling. And she was like, and enjoy your life. I was sort of laughing and I hung up with her. And then I was thinking about how, you know, I am a person. Listeners, I'm 43. I'm a person who's always viewed myself as someone who's going to have children and going to be a parent. And yet like the circumstances of my life have not made that a thing. Like I have not had any children. I have not been pregnant. And I mean, for quite a while, that was like a choice that I was trying not to get pregnant. And then for quite a while, I've like definitely been open to getting pregnant and made choices in that way. And I still haven't gotten pregnant and I don't know what's going to happen in my future. I know a lot of people choose to make choices, whether it's being a single parent by choice or starting to pursue like more when it comes to their fertility. And I know I have all those choices. And I think at this moment, I'm feeling this like weird threshold is a good word for like where I'm at personally as well, because I'm at this point where I'm, I guess, feeling this sense of like, I might have to make peace with this not happening in my body and for all kinds of reasons, like thinking that through. And then of course I could adopt or foster. Like there's many ways I could, there's lots of ways a person can be a parent, whether they have a baby out of their body or not. But again, I think I'm just at this a feeling of a crossroads of like what decisions I want to make next in my life. And feeling this currently like very deep faith and trust that whatever is like supposed to happen will, like, again, like you're saying, everything goes my way or whatever it is, you know, I don't use that saying as much in my head, but just like that I trust that what is supposed to be my experience in this lifetime will be. But I'm not saying that that's come easily. And I think that, and I'm still in it. So I guess I wanted to bring that up for anyone who might be in that place as well. But also what I've been trying to think about is like enjoying my life now. I feel like I have a really amazing life. I do have a lot of freedom. I can journal at 7 p.m. on a Sunday night and just like spend time thinking about how I feel about things and what I think about things and do things that, you know, that might not be what everybody would want to do on a Sunday night, but it's like what makes me happy. Like I have a lot of freedom. I have so many good things. So I think I'm just appreciating seeing more examples of people being really happy, women being really happy, making choices to not do that, or for whatever, I don't know everybody's story, right? For whatever reason, they don't have children, but they're also really happy, because I think whatever you said earlier about like a lot of, there's a lot of narrative around you missing out if you don't do that in your life. And that's, yeah. So those are some things I've been thinking about lately and just sort of loving seeing more discussion of it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like we could have a whole episode on this. Honestly,
maybe we should. Listeners, let us know.
Yeah. I mean, because I do think like there is a lot to this, right? Like your experience is one that we've heard from many people, or you know, something akin to your experience, right? Like, I mean, I literally was talking to somebody the other day who is around my age, which is 37, and they were like, I don't know. They're like, I would like kids, but I don't know if this is going to happen for me. Like, I don't have a partner. I want a partner before I have kids, you know, thinking through all of that. And I think, you know, these conversations are just happening more and more. We have, just like with relationships, we get sold this narrative at childhood. And I think that this is parenthood, specifically motherhood, is so deeply ingrained in our society as like, this is what you should do. And you should want this for women, right? Like we hear that message from such a young age. I mean, it's like, I feel like it's one of those things where you don't even know the first time you hear that, like that's said to you, right? And I think that's damaging for so many reasons. First of all, there's a lot of people out there who are parents who shouldn't be.
Like, who didn't want to be, who didn't want that choice. That wasn't the choice they wanted.
Or they weren't able to like say like, oh wait, that this isn't what I want. Right. It's like the people who like just should not have had children because they are not, they didn't want it.
They don't want to be parents.
Like it is such a big deal to raise another human. And like, I think, I mean, I have many rants about this. I think a lot of people don't take it very seriously. They just do it because we're told that's what you're supposed to do to be a good girl, right? Like, you should want to be a mom. And if you don't, like, the narrative around that is there's something
you're
wrong
selfish.
With you. Yeah, or you're selfish. Yeah. And you know, I get that people, like to take that as a joke. Like, and I've used that too. And say like, oh yeah, I am childless, child free. I'm just a selfish asshole. Like, you know, but it's so interesting because then when you talk to somebody about like, well, then why should I have kids? Like, what's so great? And they're like, well, you need someone to take care of you when you're older. And I'm like, that is like literally the most selfish reason to have children I've ever heard.
That's what people say. That's what you hear mostly.
Oh, that's a thing I hear all the time. When I say I don't have, well, who's going to take care of you when you're older? I'm like, the person I pay to. Like, the other component of this is I hear people all the time say something to the effect of there's nothing, like, you will never know joy or you don't until you have joy, the joy of parenthood, right?
That's more what I hear. That's more of the thing that I hear. Like, this is so joyful.
You can never, your capacity to love is like, something along those lines.
Which really gets me. That one gets me a lot.
Well, I think.
Go on.
I think that to that person, what I always want to say is go fuck yourself. Like, how dare you tell me that my life does not have joy?
Yes, and I'm sorry for laughing at that. I'm sorry.
No. It is funny. Like, it, like, I get so annoyed when people do that, because I'm like, okay, so are you saying that you had no joy before you had kids? I'm not trying to dispute the fact that children bring so much love and joy to a person mm-hmm. who wants mm-hmm. that child. Mm-hmm. Like, and if somebody wants that, like, go for it.
Yes.
However, I do not accept the premise that I cannot have joy and love, and I don't have capacity for love to, like, be larger as my life progresses just because mm-hmm. I did not choose to be a parent. And mm-hmm. I think, like, I mean, Chelsea Handler has talked about this at length, but, like, I think about all of the, like, you know, several of my friends have kids, and I get to play a role in their life. I get mm-hmm. to play a role in my nieces and nephews' lives, both financially and, like, emotionally, and get to be an adult presence. And, like, I would not have capacity for that if I had children of my own, right? Like, I wouldn't be
able to. Not in the same way. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just am like, so that love that I have for those children and that joy that they bring me, that's just still not, like, not adequate for people who are like, but more love, more joy. I just am like, oh, go fuck yourselves. Like, you're just so smug and annoying. And
that's really interesting. Yeah.
All of you, by the way, it's the ones who say that to me with a condescending tone.
I think the condescending tone is the important part, right? Because I hear you saying, like, if somebody feels that way, who's listening to us, that's beautiful. Yeah. Like, you're super happy for them. And of course, I think arguably, like, anything that brings a person more joy and more love in their life, like, at least I wholeheartedly support. I think what you're saying is when someone says it in a condescending tone towards you, in terms of your choice, what your choices are, that's where you want to say.
It's so dismissive. It's just so dismissive, right? Like, when somebody says, well, you don't really, and I feel like I see how long I could talk about this. I feel like I hear that in so many different ways from parents. And again, like, this is not all parents, but so many people have said to me something to the effect of either one, like, oh, well, you don't know, like, there's nothing like the love of a parent and a child.
Yeah.
So you That's don't.
And it feels dismissive.
It's very dismissive. And and then it gets it also into, like, this is also parents who I love dearly, who are in my life. There is nothing more goddamn annoying than if they go, hey, how are you? And I'm like, oh man, I've been so tired lately. Like, things have just been stressful. But you don't know tired until you've been up all night with a kid. I think every person I know in my life who is a parent has said something like that to me, and every time I want to be like, I wasn't in a competition with you about who's more tired. You asked me how I was, and I told you a genuine, honest response, and then mm-hmm. you dismissed it because, according to you, my life is inherently easier than you because you chose to have a child and I did not. Like, it just drives me insane, because I'm like, just say that sucks. That's all you have to say. I don't say, well, I don't have a kid, when you say you're tired from your kid all night. Like, you know, I'm like, oh man, that sucks. Yeah. Right?
Totally.
It's just dismissive. Yeah. It's annoying. See, lots of thoughts on the matter.
Well, that's really interesting. I don't have that experience of people. I don't experience a lot of people being, I mean, I don't know why, but I don't experience a lot of people being dismissive towards me. Certainly not intentionally around my experience. Like, I don't have that experience in the same way, but I definitely think it's, like, one of those things that, clearly we have a lot to say. So maybe I'll just wrap up there, but to go back to what I am loving the dialogue. I am loving/amused. I would say mostly by the Chelsea Handler thing. And I am appreciating more conversation. So listeners, if you're listening to this, and I mean, I think for me, it's a journey that I'm on for myself. Like, I'm in a different kind of journey, clearly a different kind of journey than you are. Cause I'm like, I remember reading a book, maybe I've told you this before. Elizabeth Gilbert wrote this book called Committed. And I was reading it in like my early 30s. And I had this boyfriend at the time who said that he didn't want kids. I was reading the book. And in the book, she says she decided that she was not going to have children in her life, but she was going to be auntie to the world. Have I told you the story before?
No.
I just remember my boyfriend at the time who had just told me he didn't want kids was taking a nap. And I just sat crying, looking at him, thinking to myself, I don't want to just be auntie to the world. I want to be a mom. And we broke up shortly thereafter. So, you know, like making choices like that have felt important to me, but it's interesting at this point to be at this, you know, not that I can certainly, like, I think lots of women have children at any point. So I'm not saying I can't, I'm making the choice not to at this point. But just sort of grappling with it and appreciating more voices of different experiences of joy and love and happiness in one's life, whether you have children or not.
There being nuance and different pathways and different options for people. The thing that frustrates me is when the narrative becomes like you have to, or you should. Actually, it's not you have to. It's you should. You should want this thing. And I think that can be dismissive in all sorts of ways, right? Like this narrative that, like, in order to be quote unquote real mother, guys, I'm saying this with sarcasm, like you have to birth a child, which like is just not possible for some people for all sorts of reasons, right? Like
I think
parenthood can be so many things. And I think like we have been so limiting of that. And that can make people feel really, really shitty if they don't fit into like a perfect box too, right?
Totally. And you know, it occurs to me also, just in thinking about stereotypes of women, that perhaps the reason people don't say that as much to me is because I'm unmarried. Maybe it happens to you more because you're married and you've been in a marriage for a long time that people are like, well, of course, this would be the next step for you. Whereas me, they're still like, no, she still has, no one's chosen her yet.
That's true.
I'm just going to keep going with the stereotypes here. She wouldn't want to be a single mother. So please note all the sarcasm, everyone. Yes. Maybe the reason that doesn't happen to me as much is because of that too. Like for you, it's like, oh, well, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And admittedly that has gone down. Like the first few years after we got married, it was constant.
Yeah.
Like
really.
It's also so weird when somebody's like, so you guys planning to have kids? And if I'm like, oh no, we're not going to, and they like, it's like their brain fritzes. It's very, like
they don't know what to say next. You've broken the script. You've broken the script of what the script is.
Right. That's true. And in fact, one of the things I have been trying to do, like when I'm in class and I tell my students, like I tell them a little bit about myself. And then I say, okay, any questions what questions do you have about me? This is your chance, like the first day. And somebody asked this year if I had kids. And I said, nope, but I specifically made a choice to say I'm child-free by choice. Like, and like, I mean, this is, you know, probably part of my like still having some tie to this, you know, narrative of what we should. I always try to make a point to be like, you know, I have like lots of kids in my life. I don't hate kids. Like,
interesting.
Right? There's a caveat because that is the impression I feel like it gives. I'm like, no, I don't hate kids. I just like don't want kids of my own. I like my independence. I like the way my life is. So I think I think it's so deeply ingrained in us.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, y'all, if you want us to talk about this more, let us know.
Yeah.
What are you loving this week? Thank you for being in dialogue with me around that.
I can keep this one real nice and short. So my neighbor, and also she's also my friend, but like for some reason, I feel like I always should describe her as my neighbor because that is an extra added. Anyway, the same woman who taught me how to knit recently, she was gone for a couple months kind of over the holidays. And she came back and she brought me two of the most thoughtful gifts that I have received. I can't even tell you since when. So one of them, I'm going to show you, Solveig, I haven't shown you this yet, is a notepad. I hope you can see this. Look at who is on the notepad.
Listeners, there's a really wonderful drawing of you know who. We know who. I mean, which celebrity crush do you think this one is? We've been talking about celebrity crushes, I feel like, a bit on here. And this one might be a fictional character crush, but also real. I don't know.
Anyways. But the love is real of a one, Roy Kent. And the,
that was great.
Isn't it such a cute, and it says, oi, fuck more to do at the bottom. That it's just like a cute little, like, you know, writing your to-do list down on Notepad. Yes. And then the other thing is a copy of the book Outlander, and it's signed by the author.
Wow, those are incredibly thoughtful gifts. On point,
right? They're very, like, specific to my loves. It's like,
seriously,
right? I know there's nothing like a great, like, it reminded me how nice it is to get a gift that, like, somebody is thinking of you specifically, right? Like these would not be perfect gifts for everyone.
No, but for you, they're amazing and so, so reflective of, I mean, this is, yeah, I feel like we should just, again, like, highlight how brilliant your friend slash neighbor is, yeah, at finding something that's just the best for you. How did they find a signed copy, did they say?
Yeah, she was in I think Santa Fe or somewhere.
Okay,
in the,
that tracks.
They were in the Southwest. It's so, the Diana Gabaldon, the woman who wrote Outlander, lives somewhere in the Southwest of the US, and I can't remember exactly where, but, like, they went to this local bookstore that was, like, the bookstore that she always goes and does readings at. It's, like, near her hometown. So she always, like, it wasn't like they just happened upon it. I think they were going to the bookstore anyway, but it wasn't like they just found a signed copy somewhere.
Wow. Yeah. Still so cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I hope that doesn't sound like I'm dismissing it. I just mean, like, it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so cool. And I think it's also kind of nice, like, it's making me think more about making sure when I see something that reminds me of someone to just buy it, because I've done that before, but I've been like, oh, there's not, like, any, like, holiday or birthday that's coming up. I'm really bad at that. Some people are so good at just getting the thing whenever. I'm not, but it was a good reminder too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I admire people like that too. I have a girlfriend that was, like, telling me about this present that she had bought for someone who was graduating from medical school, and, like, the, you know, they had bought the present, like, a year beforehand, but was like, I'm gonna give this when they graduate from medical school. And I was like, you are an amazing gift giver. Like, it was also a very niche, like, band that this person liked that they were planning ahead. I am also not one of those people, but I really respect and admire people, and also figure they must have more storage than I do, because I don't know where I'd put all the things. But anyways, that's cool. Those are great gifts.
I have it right here. I didn't even realize it, the book.
That's awesome. We haven't talked much about Outlander on here recently, so I think we should probably come back to that at some point too.
Yeah, that's a whole nother episode too. Okay, we better get into Ted Lasso. Listeners, and welcome to we're going to be doing season 2, episode 4 of Ted Lasso for this week's podcast. And the title of this episode is Carol of the Bells. And if you're watching along with us, you know that this is the Christmas episode. We are going to start with a recap of the episode. We'll talk about the theme, and then we have the theme broken down into kind of three primary storylines that we're going to be covering. So first up, the recap of this episode. This is a Christmas episode. We see three primary stories happening on Christmas Day. Roy, Keeley, and Phoebe are on a quest. Ted and Rebecca are acting as elves, and the Higgins team family Christmas is happening. Little There's little progress in this episode in terms of the story and the progression of any of the ongoing stories, but we do get to spend 30 minutes feeling warm and cozy and all of the holiday cheer with the team. So I will say no complaints on my end about that. So that's the quick recap of this episode. And when we were thinking about a theme, we realized that really Higgins at the end of the episode hit the nail on the head when it came to the theme of this whole episode, to the family we're born with and to the family we make along the way. And we've seen so much in this show about this concept of creating your team or your family, right? Like bringing together people for support and happiness and achieving things. And we just see that really highlighted in all of the sweet, I think kind of cliche, but in the best way, Christmas ways in this episode.
Yeah, that's a great way of summarizing that. I'm curious, did you watch this episode around the holiday season?
Yeah, I did. It makes me very happy. It also made me want to have like a big Christmas holiday, which I didn't end up having, but there is something about it that just feels so like idyllic.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I also pulled this episode specifically and watched it around the holidays, and it's a good one. I think you had mentioned at some point in the past, I think on this podcast, that was going to be one of your returning to holiday and your whatever holiday things that you watched. And I feel like it is for me as well. And also it was interesting going to watch it again and feeling like, oh, I just watched this, because as we're recording this, y'all, it's February. And, you know, I was like, oh, I just watched this. Do I want to watch it again? And then I watched it again and I was like, oh yeah, no, I want to watch it again. It's nice. It's still nice. So that was it. I mean, not surprising considering how much I enjoy this show, but also nice to watch it, even if you're not fully in, I think, Christmas spirit right now.
Yeah, it still gives all the warm, fuzzy feelings. And I mean, we're in Alaska right now and it just snowed a foot. So it feels like it's Christmas time here.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there was such a beautiful in this episode, and in many, most of the episodes, but it's, you know, really highlighted in this one in terms of the sense of caring for one another that shows up, and everybody sort of the different ways that people are caring for one another was really beautiful to watch. And also, I think noteworthy is also the humor that, like, everybody's bringing humor to situations, and like you said, the good cheer. And that's pretty awesome to see in these different ways.
Mm-hmm. I feel like throughout the entire episode, we see like a very strong current of like the Ted energy is what I would call it. Like everyone had Ted energy in this episode in a way that like normally you have, I mean, other than Jamie, I guess maybe at the beginning, but normally you've got people who are a little bit more resistant to that. And it seemed like the holiday maybe brought that out in everyone, the Ted of it all.
That's a great observation. Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So who do you want to talk about first? You noticed there was three kind of main storylines throughout. Which one would you like to talk about first?
Well, why don't we talk about Keely Roy and Phoebe first? I feel like that's the lowest stakes, but like it's like the lightest of the three storylines, I feel like. I just wanted to mention with this episode, if it felt to viewers that maybe it like you didn't really know how it connected to the other episodes that you've seen so far. And you'll probably notice when we come, you know, go back to episode 5, the next episode, it like will feel like this episode didn't really totally happen, is because this was an added episode. Just fun facts about the show. So Apple had originally ordered 10 episodes of Ted Lasso, and then the writers all went into the writer's room and they wrote out the story of the 10 episodes. And then after that had happened, Apple was like, actually, we want 2 more episodes. So
interesting.
This is one of the episodes that was added. And I think they do a nice job with it. I like that they made it a holiday episode. I think that that's fun. And it's a nice way to you know, not have to make it fit within the storyline really closely, and it still feels good. The other episode is a real weird one that they added that we'll get to in a few episodes. I forget which one it is. I think it's like eight or nine, whichever one it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll get to that one. It's also strange. And I think once I did not know that, but once you shared that with me, I was like, oh, okay, these two make a little more sense, because they do feel, this one and the whatever it is, I think it's episode eight, I think you're right about that, both feel a little like just slightly out of place.
Yeah. Like, you know, kind of tacked totally. In. You're like, I mean, it's the same people, but like, usually the show is so good about like hitting on these like running storylines that are happening. And then this one just feels a little disjointed. And that other one feels extremely disjointed. So
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm so glad anyway, you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. Keely, Roy, and Phoebe, I think that's the one that we should start with. And we learn early on that Keely and Roy have been planning Sexy Christmas. Did Sexy Christmas sound good to you?
It sounded really fun. Yeah. I was like, that's awesome. Did it sound good to you?
It did. It just was... I like the idea, but then the thought of like getting fully dressed up to sit in my house sounds less ideal.
I mean, she was definitely in the beginning of the episode, we see her going pretty hard on the theme, which good for her. You know, she was really dressing up for that. Yeah, I thought it sounded fun. I was like, okay, that's a cool thing you can do if there aren't, you know, other people that you have to deal with in your family. It's just the two of That's you true. And you can have Sexy Christmas.
That's yeah. true. I suppose it also kind of highlights this thing that, especially in new relationships that we find ourselves doing, is establishing rituals mm-hmm. like associated with holidays and establishing new rituals, right? Like that is something that you do early on. I mean, I guess it doesn't have to be early on in relationships, but you tend to see it more early on when you're kind of mm-hmm. navigating and negotiating holidays, because we have so much ritual already inherently tied to the holidays, oftentimes associated with our family. And so it is sweet seeing Keely and Roy kind of establishing this new ritual, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll have Sexy Christmas again.
Maybe who knows what'll happen next. Yeah, but I do, that's a great point, that is like, that's often a relational, so Sexy Christmas, fun new tradition potentially for them, that is interrupted pretty quickly,
yeah, by Phoebe being there.
Yeah and I think we both probably noted this, that like, it's pretty surprising how quickly they both adapt in that situation. Like, thinking about in the last, I think it was the last episode, you were talking about wish fulfillment. And I feel like this is also another one of those examples of like, they're both pretty quick to adapt to like, oh, it's not going to be Sexy Christmas. We're going to have this time with Phoebe. It's going to be a different thing. I'm not sure that... every couple would be that at ease with that quickly. But yeah, I don't know. What were you noticing in that?
I actually didn't feel like that was as much wish fulfillment. The way that, I mean, I think it was noteworthy that, like, you know, Keely was very mature and like acknowledging like, yeah, I guess we're going to roll with it. No problem. Like we can figure out another day for it to be Sexy Christmas, and just like kind of being like, yeah, it's fine. I thought that was sweet and it was nice of her. I also think that, I don't know, I think given the context, what we've seen, the situation, it didn't seem that bizarre that they were both able to be like, oh, okay, well, now we have this kid. Because it seems like Phoebe is a really important part of Roy's life. And it seems like he is one of her primary caregivers. Keely also understands that, like, that she, it seems like whatever has happened in their relationship, like there has been some sort of understanding that has been come to where she also understands that, like, he is a primary caregiver for this kid, and like she's part of the package of him.
Yes, I totally agree with you. I just think it's interesting how quickly, like, considering how much time she was looked to be putting into this thing that she was doing, to be able to pivot that quickly, I think is admirable. And perhaps fictional for some people. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know that everybody could be, even I agree with you, like they both have this this value and obviously love Phoebe, and that's important. And I think when you're really excited, I don't know, I just put myself in Keely's position. If I were really excited, I think it would take me a minute to be like, okay, we're doing something different. And I know this is what we're doing. And of course it's important, but I would probably have taken a little bit longer. And I think I'm pretty adaptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think like it's disappointing when things don't go according to our plans, right? When our expectations are violated. That is uncomfortable, even if it's for a good reason. I think that that is reasonable. I imagine too, Keely kind of had to mask, right? A little bit of that, because you've got this little kid whose mom got called into surgery and already is having kind of a bad holiday for an unknown reason at that point. And like, you suck it up, right? Like you suck it up and you kind of mask that. Maybe she's bitching to her girlfriends in a text.
Maybe, or at just minimum, just I think there's so many expectations around, at least for some people. Okay, I'll just speak for myself. I have a lot of expectations around Christmas. That's like a big, so if that were like an expectation, and I think a lot of people do around certain holidays, like just being able to be like, okay, take a deep breath. Things, we're doing something different is necessary for some. So they were both like so cool about it. And I just love how Roy is able to pause after he like sets down all his bags and be like, oh my gosh, you look amazing. Right. Like he like is able to acknowledge her. I think they just both do, I guess what I mean, I don't know what you mean by wish fulfillment, but they both do what I would hope two people would do in a situation. And I just want to acknowledge that not everybody would do that just like that.
Yeah, but everyone should.
Yes, that's what I mean about everything in this episode. And I think that's like you were saying that too, like there's like so many things where you're like, oh, that's so nice that that happened that way. And also holidays are often fraught with all kinds of other things going on too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that like the one benefit for Keely and Roy is that it was just for them, and that like it is so much easier to reschedule when it's just two of you, right? Like you can be like, I think that's as someone who is a partnered, child-free person, like I think I look at that. I think that's where I was like, oh yeah, this is like a reasonable way to react, because when you are so untethered by like different obligations, you can be like, yeah, we'll just do our holiday on another day because we can do that. Totally. So I think that is part of what I was, you know, acknowledging, right? Like they're like, we can just have a sexy December 28th.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. And I mean, chocolate covered strawberries can still be consumed by children. So that's fine.
Totally. They clearly made it work. They totally made it work. And then of course we learned that Phoebe's got this sad dynamic going on where she has been made fun of basically at school through a Christmas gift for having bad breath. A hilarious scene ensues where both of them try to comfort her by smelling her breath and have a really hard time comforting her fully.
I think that that might be like the single best physical comedy that I have ever seen, is especially Roy trying not to like react, like his face. I forgot how much that scene made me laugh.
Agreed. It's very impressive, and a good point about the physical comedy of it. Yeah.
Becomes evident pretty quickly that there's something medically wrong with Phoebe. And so they go on this quest, which I thought was just such a sweet way of like giving them all three a purpose in this episode, which was to find a dentist in Roy's posh neighborhood. And if they couldn't find one, and I think he said 10 houses, then he would give them each £1,000, which I think like this episode really highlighted how wealthy these people are, like how he was just throwing money. And then, you know, we get to Rebecca. She also is quite wealthy. Like, you know, I mean, we know that they have money, but like, I feel like I often forget how incredibly wealthy they all are.
Yeah, good point. And we haven't really seen that as much as in this episode, where there is a lot of money being shared. yeah, I mean, I thought excellent casting too in terms of the dentist that they finally land on. I don't know if you noticed, but she looks so much like the guy who is like, oh, let's take an Usie, who is also ends up being a part of her family. Like, I was like, whoever cast that, they did a really nice job there.
I wonder if they're related in real life.
I mean, they look very similar.
They do look like they could be. Yeah, they look like. And I like that that guy made a reappearance too.
I do
that
too.
Make me happy. He just like pops up every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, so we kind of just see this little quest that they go on and eventually find a dentist and figure out what's wrong as a result of Phoebe's cat. And I did think it was funny that like the go-to both for the dentist and Roy was like, we'll just get rid of the cat. And Phoebe or and Keely, I forget exactly what she says, but I thought it was very sweet how she was very much on Phoebe's side and was like, that's ridiculous. And these two very smart people are going to come up with some other option because science and real and it's Christmas.
Exactly. Yeah, she's a great advocate for Phoebe in that moment too. And then they're both great for Phoebe in different ways. And that's pretty neat to see there. And then we see them getting medication for her and also finding a way to connect back with, I can't remember the kid's name.
Bernard.
Bernard, in a really sweet call, funny, amusing for those of us who like Love Actually, call back to Love Actually, where they end by saying, I forgive you, but please do better, which sounds just like a thing Brett Goldstein says. Side note, if you know, like that just sounds like a Brett Goldstein line.
Yeah, it sounds like a Todd Lasso line too.
Yeah, yeah.
I think like it's Ted, right? Like, I think that that's what I mean when I say like this whole episode was sort of a lot of Ted, like that. And it was cute and a nice homage to Love Actually. And also like such a Ted thing to do, to immediately go to forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not demand an apology or demand retribution, just to like, I don't know, accept people where they're at and still forgive them. So I thought that like, that's the Ted, right? Like the magic of Ted.
Yeah, Ted, that's a Santa great Claus, point.
Maybe.
That's a great point. And I love when Keely says, doesn't it feel better to solve a problem than beat up a little kid? And Roy's like, not totally sold.
And Roy really wants to beat up this little kid.
Yeah, it's cute. He's being a protector. It's also cuter that he doesn't ultimately beat him up.
Yeah. I think like one of the things I like about this episode and how they portray Keely and Roy is it, you know, it doesn't progress story much, but it does give us some insight into like the rapport that they've built in their relationship and the dynamic that they have. And it does feel very like, you know, we always hear this, the term of like opposites attract. And I think like the better way to think about this is complementary traits tend to find themselves, like find each other. And like, this is such a great example of that, where like Roy is Phoebe's advocate, where he's like, who's Bernard? Yeah. And Keely's like, let's find a different option other than killing the cat or getting rid of the cat. Like, hold up, right? Like they do it in different ways. And it's a nice balance that is present with them. So you get to see some of that in a way that we haven't really seen in the other episodes so far. And it does seem like they have like a very happy, stable dynamic there. Yeah. Not a lot of drama, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They seem like they're an awesome team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Do you have anything else for Keely, Roy, Phoebe?
Nope. That's great.
Okay. Do you want to go on to Rebecca and Ted next, or the Higgins family?
Maybe let's talk about the Higgins family, because I feel like the Rebecca and Ted thing wraps it all together at the end. How do you feel about that?
Sure, that works.
So we also see just a really endearing situation with the Higgins family. We learn at the beginning of this episode that Higgins often invites people who don't have a place, it's team members who don't have a place to go for the holidays, to come to their house. But we also learn that people don't often show up. Maybe there's one or two people that show up to these holiday gatherings that their family hosts. So there's this beginning sort of scene where we have maybe low expectations for what's going to happen. We see the Higgins family having a really fun time together, celebrating the holiday, and then Sam showing up.
It seems as if Higgins has a really like stable, kind, supportive family life with his five children and yeah. lovely wife. But my favorite running joke in this storyline is every single thing that somebody brings has aluminum foil over it.
Oh, no, I didn't notice that.
Everything, like nobody has like a Tupperware with like a lid. It's uh-huh. all a dish with aluminum foil over it, which I don't know why that tickled me so much, but it was such a funny, like visually running gag. The whole thing is so hilarious. I'm like, I have so many questions. I'm like, how did they get there? Did they drive? Were they on the tube with that? Like, I also appreciate that Sam, which feels very true to Sam's character, when asked what Christmas reminds him of, he just says colonization.
Yeah, he's so great at just like speaking the truth and also like that being enough. Like you've mentioned that before about like, he's like, this is what this is. But then it's not like that's going to create some dynamic for the like, you know, an uncomfortable dynamic within that family gathering. They're just like, oh, yeah, okay. And then they move on with whatever else they're doing. And Sam's like, can I use the toilet? That's actually why I'm here.
And we kind of just see then like a lot of the players showing up, and it becomes like abundantly clear that far more than the Higgins family had ever had in the past are coming to this family gathering, and in like with a very joyous spirit. I felt like that was so sweet. Every time they opened the door, everyone was like, hey, and like excited. They weren't there because like they were depressed and didn't have anywhere else to be, but it seemed like they genuinely wanted to be there.
Yeah.
And enjoy one another's company, which I think is like, that is noteworthy, because that's not always the case on a team. Or in any group, even a family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's so much, so many fun dishes that people are bringing and tradition, you know, like they're sharing their mix of traditions. And then we see just people doing fun things together, which is often, I think, like at least what we hope will happen on a holiday for most of us, right? That there's, you know, they're playing with like they're like Nerf battling together with the kids. They're making jokes with one another. There's an element of sharing food, being together, like all of these things that are, I think for most of us, what make holidays valuable are happening in this situation with the team and the Higgins family.
Mm-hmm. It felt, I don't know if it felt this way to you, but as I was watching it, like it very close to how often like my larger family gatherings will be, where like there's some people doing one thing and other people are in the kitchen, and like there's a group who you actually literally usually there's some sort of Nerf battle happening. Like that felt extremely close to home, but it felt very familial, right? Like mm-hmm. people just kind of made themselves at home. And I think that like, if we're thinking about like, what is the climate of this group of people? Like that's comfort. That's what that indicates. People who can sit down and play a video game and help clean up and talk to the kids and play a game and like all of those things, those are very like comfortable, familial things that they're able to do. And that shows us like that's where the climate is. It really is this family. And if we're to bring it back to the theme, this idea of the family you create, you know, that's what we're seeing here, is that family dynamic.
It's so lovely at the end of that sort of that storyline, as Higgins is you know, acknowledging each of the players and where they're from, and that he's grateful. And, you know, in his toast that he makes, he's grateful that they're all there together.
I think I just want to note too, Higgins knew the hometowns of every single one of the people there. When we think about little gestures that people can do to make us feel seen and acknowledged as a whole human, like where you're from, especially with this group of people who are like literally only in, as far as we know, for most of them, only in London because of football. They're not immigrants who like have a foot in both places. They're literally there to play a sport, and so probably feel a lot of tie to their homeland.
Yeah. And perhaps, I mean, we don't really know what Higgins was like before this. We don't really, but considering that he has apparently such like a loving family, possibly things that he was doing too, that he brings to the leadership of that team as well in his own way.
I wonder if he wasn't as comfortable like bringing some of that. I'm trying to think, like, he has a softness to him, like a very gentle energy. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, given what we know about Rupert, when Higgins was working there for Rupert, like, I imagine that that kind of energy was not celebrated in the way that it is under Ted. And like, just another indication of how, you know, who is in the position of power and who is in leadership really can change what people are comfortable bringing to that dynamic.
Yeah. Great point. I can't imagine under Rupert's leadership, but I also think we should give a nod to Rebecca here, because it is Ted's influence, but it's also Rebecca coming into her own again, it seems, and like returning to her center and who she was. But yeah, I agree. I mean, from what we've seen about the way that Rupert and Rebecca, what little we know of what it was like, it probably wasn't an environment where Higgins could fully be himself. Mm-hmm. And I think we see that in season one a lot, that he's sort of on edge the whole time in a way that he doesn't seem like he feels the need to be anymore.
Do you think Rebecca would have changed if Ted hadn't come? But do you think she would have if there was no Ted?
Well, I want to have faith in Rebecca that she would have had some sort of awakening, but it might not have happened on the same timeline or in the same way. I mean, I think Ted is definitely, like, clearly Ted's an influence in that. But I mean, it sounds like the way she's been talked about, that is more of who she was. She was just in a really weird situation with her previous relationship. Yeah. What do you think?
I think that that's why they're soulmates. I think like they are intrinsically tied together, and I don't know that she would have fully come out of that space that she was in if she didn't have an influence like Ted, because he has pushed her in so many ways. Like, I think that they are soulmates. I don't think that they're romantic soulmates, but I think that their souls are like tied together. And I think that that is why he had to go there, no matter how implausible it was and how ridiculous and what the pretenses of him going there were under. I think that that was vital, and I don't know that we would see this from her. I think she could have like gone the other way and just stayed in that dark space.
Who knows. I like that. Did you have anything else you want to talk about the Higgins family?
I think we should move on to Rebecca and Ted. That's a good segue.
Yeah, exactly. So we see Ted hoping to spend time with his son on Skype or whatever it is that they were going to be talking on, right? That there was some sort of plan for him to spend his Christmas online, basically. Yeah. And we hear that at the beginning.
Right. And it doesn't seem like it goes particularly well, which like anyone who suffered through Zoom Christmases during the pandemic probably can identify with. Like, I feel like we all had extra empathy for Ted in that moment, or at least I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And also just it just also reminded me of like the way that, you know, kids are like, oh, cool, I have a drone now. Like, focus on the drone and not
The connection just isn't always the same, right? Like, if Ted was there in person, or if they were in the same place, he would have been playing with the drone with his son. It would have been a shared activity. But when you're separated by an ocean and most of a country, you just like that is not going to happen in the same way. And I imagine maybe he had some like grand idea of what that Christmas would have been like. And I imagine that what transpired was not necessarily it, even though what transpired seemed like exactly what I expected was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like Rebecca expected that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, so she's there. Well, also then Ted watches, I know that that is an iconic Christmas time movie. I never can remember it. I've never seen that movie. Is it A Christmas Story?
I think later they say It's a Wonderful Life. I've never watched it, actually.
There's like two or three movies that like get referenced a lot that are like old movies, mm-hmm. and I never have seen them, and I never, like, people will say it, I'm like, no idea. There's one where a guy almost dies from suicide, and there's another one. Wait, no, I don't even know.
I don't know, because I don't watch them either, so I'm
anyway,
not sure.
Anyway, I do know that that movie, that I don't know if you know this, but the guy, like, contemplates suicide, I think.
Okay.
I don't know the rest of it. I don't think he does, but I think that that is a consider. That's kind of what he's considering there.
In that scene. Yeah. I mean, it seems like Ted's drinking some whiskey and watching something that is maybe Christmas themed. I don't know. Y'all, if you're listening to this and want to tell us all the great things about that movie, I don't know them either, but like, it definitely looks depressing what's happening where he's at.
Yeah. So not great. He's really leaning into the sadness. And Rebecca shows up and has a really lovely, I don't know, moment with him where she replicates it's kind of a callback to a couple episodes ago. I think it was last season when he had the players spell out "Hi, boss" outside her window. And so she says, "Hi, Ted," and brings him on kind of a little quest of her own. There's some quests happening.
Yeah. And I mean, it's fun. They, you know, they start out walking. He doesn't really know. He's like, are we going to Elton John's house? Like, what are we doing here? I might need to go dress up more. And they come across these buskers that are singing a very nice song and leave them some money. Rebecca leaving lots of money for.
Again, Rebecca is very wealthy. She's friends with Elton John. I just like.
Right.
I think we forget. I forget anyway.
I forget. Yeah, it's easy to not remember those details. So yeah, and then we see this really pretty fun day, it looks like, where they go and deliver presents to children and families that look like they could use them.
Yeah, they kind of act like little elves.
Yeah.
I will say the first family they went to, when like you actually see the exchange with the mom, like it seems like the parent.
Uh-huh.
There was something that I was like, I mean, she seems grateful, but like, I feel like if somebody just showed up at your house magically with everything that your kid had asked for, and it was a giant bag, she was just like, oh, thank you so much. And
I just like
reaction.
I assumed she knew. I mean, I agree. The reaction was kind of low key, but I assumed that she must know that they were coming. And so there was that sort of a response to like this thing that maybe, I don't know. I know like sometimes families will sign up for programs like that. So I just assumed she maybe knew that was coming. But yeah, agreed. It's not, she's not like overflowing with gratitude.
Yeah. But I think what we're seeing here as we're watching Ted and Rebecca and they're being kind and handing out all of these presents, which again, because Rebecca's loaded, is something that I know I oftentimes think about this, or I talk to other people about this, is when we are in more of a down time in our lives, one of the things that really can be good for us and helpful to bring out of that kind of downness is being of service to others. Like that is one of the best things that you can do to help find some purpose and help find some confidence and just feelings of goodness. And I think it's one that like we don't talk about a ton. I feel like just as a society that just being of service to others, and it doesn't have to be this like giant buying all the presents in the world for someone. Because I think that this is a good example of Rebecca being of service in two ways, right? She got all those gifts and is making some families like really, really happy at Christmas, but is also of service to Ted in this moment. That he probably is not having a great holiday.
Yeah. I mean, she says, right, there's a scene where they're walking along and she acknowledges that her first Christmas, she just spent plotting how she could make Rupert's life miserable, right? Like she acknowledged that she knew what it was like to have a first Christmas alone after divorce. And that she was mindful of that. And that is part of why she went to see if Ted wanted to come with her. So yeah, I mean, she's being very caring, not only for the community, it seems like, but also for Ted in that moment.
This is just another example of, I think it was last season at some point, we were talking about how Rebecca is like a year ahead of Ted in the recovery of divorce. And I feel like this is just another marker of that, that kind of shows like, okay, as with any major life thing that is going to bring grief, which a divorce is inherently going to bring grief. Mm-hmm. You know, we go through those stages and you end up better on the other end, but sometimes it's hard to realize that when you're in the midst of it. And Rebecca is kind of like this little beacon for Ted to show like, okay, this year is going to suck because it's the first year. And like we mentioned earlier, all of the rituals that he might have had, like they are going to shift. But like, hey, in a year, this isn't going to be so awful. I promise.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that way, I mean, they both, going back to the theme of the family you make along the way, you know, in that way, it's like she's bringing him into her family. Like they are having this family moment. You know, if you think about your friend family, they're doing that together. And there's also, not only are they like having a sense of purpose by giving, and that sort of happiness that comes, or the purpose that comes from giving. I think it's also just like valuable to notice all the generosity in this, you know, the ways that they're generous with the buskers, with the families. And then at the very end, we see them, instead of, you know, going their separate ways or going to Elton John's party or any of the other things they could have done, getting those buskers that they found to go sing outside the Higgins's house.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm a sucker for any like group singing together or scene.
Are you?
No matter really? How ridiculous and ill, like it makes no sense, and yet I'm here for it, especially like a good song. And I mean, I feel like they just were looking for an excuse to have Hannah Waddingham sing because she's phenomenal. But I just like, it just makes me so happy. It's one of those things that I think is so perfect and beautiful in movies and TV, and would be my worst goddamn nightmare in person.
I don't know why I didn't expect you to like that, but it, I'm glad that you like that. But yeah, I can imagine it being your worst nightmare.
Yeah, it in person feels like it would be so awkward because it just never goes as beautifully as when it's all beautifully edited together.
In
TV.
A movie or TV. Yeah, I sort of always hope that life will be that way. But I suppose if it happened, I might be a little confused and not sure what to do. But I think I would also be like, it's sort of like, have you ever been in a place where, what are they called? Where everybody starts dancing together?
Flash mob.
Have you ever been around a flash mob?
No, but it would stress me the fuck out. It stresses me out just thinking about it.
I've been around over the years, and they make me really happy. So I think that's like the closest I have to like spontaneous singing happening. Well, no, that's not true. I mean, sometimes I walk by, like in a big city, walk by like a choir singing or playing instrument or musicians playing instruments, whatever. Any of those things make me very, very happy.
People like buskers and that, like that kind of stuff doesn't make me uncomfortable. I like that seems normal. I mean, not in Alaska necessarily, but like in a city where that is like more the norm, that would not be as odd to me. I think it would still feel pretty odd if I like opened my door and there was a full band in the street. Like, I just like how everyone was just like, yeah, we're going to roll with everyone, like got their instruments. And it was like, everyone just like, of course, Ted and Rebecca are out here with this band.
Totally. Oh, yeah.
I love it, but it's so bonkers.
Definitely suspending reality. See, I am like super stoked with anybody singing around me. What I would not enjoy is if they handed me the microphone and were like, your turn. That I would not like. But if I'm just getting to enjoy other people bursting into song or dance or whatever they're doing and nobody expects anything of me, I'm quite delighted.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree with, I think that's actually probably what stresses me out is I'm not great at, I'm great at many things that I will happily acknowledge. Here are two things I am not good at: dancing and singing. And so when that's happening, like live around me, I'm like, oh, no, nobody, nope. Like, I just want to like back slowly into a corner.
Okay. Because of you're worried about the expectation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And of somebody and expecting something of you.
Yeah. Because I feel like people who can sing think everyone can sing. And it really, I'm like, I cannot. Look, do I love music? Will I sing alone in my car? Like, yes, it does not stop me from enjoying music. Do I have the vocal ability to sing on a microphone? Not one that I like, I'm not interested in that. It's not great for anyone. I just cannot hold a tune. I never have been musically inclined.
Yeah.
Not bashing myself, just know where my limits are.
No, I understand. It's part of why I had to, I have never really enjoyed karaoke. Nope. Because I have never felt confident in that part of my life either. And also, it seems like the people that love it are usually the people that also sound really amazing, which makes sense to me that you would love it because you're also like, I'm an amazing singer. So of course I'll go to karaoke and have a really fun time. I know there's lots of people that go to karaoke that don't like aren't amazing singers, but in my experience, most of the karaoke places I've been, it's been representative of most people being really, really good, and then sort of a joke in between.
Yes, agreed. And I think that this is just, I just want to speak to all of the people who are like me, and it sounds like maybe like you, who are just not as musically inclined. Please don't force us to sing karaoke. Don't give us a microphone. If somebody says no, just like trust them. It is, I have some people in my life who are, I think, pretty good singers, and they always want to do karaoke, and they're like, well, yeah, you'd have to do it. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. How do you want to go run 10 miles at the pace that I run it? Oh, that doesn't sound good to you. That's not what you want to do. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree with you. I'm also the same way. Please do not make me try to sing anything. But also, for everybody who is listening, who loves karaoke and doesn't give a fuck about how you sound, I just want to say I admire you and I aspire to become like you, because I actually do think it would be fun, and it's something I'm working on in my life. I actually think I reclaimed karaoke a little bit this fall. I did not do karaoke, but I went to an event of karaoke with some people, and I had a really, really fun time. And I was like, okay, this isn't the worst.
I also like, if people want to go do that stuff, I love it. And I actually don't mind attending. I just don't, I feel like there's this obligation to participate. And Sylvia, you sound like you are like, but I want to be a person kind of who's up there. Okay.
I kind of do.
That's also, I support that. I want to clarify, I do not.
I don't want anyone to make me, also, just to be clear. I would like to do it of my own accord in 20 years or whenever it is that I decide to do this in my lifetime, or maybe whatever. Anyways, but yeah, I have a lot of admiration for the people that don't care at all, but I'm not one of them yet. And I can totally psychoanalyze myself around that, but I'm not one of them yet.
I feel like there would be nothing, like if somebody said, what's one skill that you could have, just like if we snapped your fingers and had it, there is something that sounds so amazing about being able to like open your mouth and beautiful notes come out. Like as someone who just does not have that, that seems like a magical power to me.
Me too.
I can't imagine just like, that's just what you sound like. I'm like, who, what?
I know.
Sorcery.
It's pretty hard to fathom. Agreed. Well, anyway, I guess
that's
established
what Santa for.
Yeah, that we would both be happy to watch any musicals you want to send our way, perhaps. Do you like musicals, actually? I just realized you do. Okay, yeah, me too. So we'd like to watch them. Solveig would be okay with spontaneous singing happening around her. Marcia would prefer none of that.
Yeah, less so. Less interested in that. But do love musicals. Love a musical.
Yeah. So the end is so sweet. We even get to see Santa Claus fly by. Like, there's just some cute, magical things happening in this episode. Do you have a favorite line or a favorite Tedism from this episode?
I do like, it wasn't a TED, Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't a TEDxSum, but when Roy and Keeley are talking to Phoebe and they're trying to figure out what's wrong with her, Roy says, "What are you gonna be sad about? Did one of the Paw Patrol dogs die?" I don't know why that made me so happy, but it just, I kind of love that he knows about Paw Patrol too. I just like, I like the joke, and I like what it implies.
That's awesome. I have a couple of favorite lines too, but they're not from Ted. One of them is from, I don't know why this makes me laugh, but it makes me laugh a lot when Danny Rojas comes in and says, "If you want to be a little cheeky, you can put some tequila in it." And then Higgins' wife says, "This one smells like it has alcohol already." And he says, "Yes, this one is pre-cheekied." I think that is a very cute, very, very cute moment. Really quite enjoy that line. I also just like the word cheeky. Like, it's not one we use as much in American English, and it makes me laugh a lot. I also really enjoy the line towards the end where Ted and Rebecca are talking about what they're going to do next. And he's like, "Don't you want to go to the Elton John?" They have this running joke throughout about, or at least it comes up a couple times, about Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig doing a puppet show. And he's like, aren't you going to be sad to miss the puppet show? And Rebecca says, "Well, all I really want to do is see those two fuck." Like, I just like, it like catches me off guard. And then I'm like, oh, that's hilarious.
I feel like everyone, like Ted has the reaction that everyone else watching it unanimously probably had, which was like, "Oh yeah, okay. Not mad at that."
Yeah, it just makes me laugh and kind of caught me off guard. So yeah, those are my lines from this. Well, we hope you enjoyed the Christmas episode. Watch it any time of year, it turns out, if you'd like some good cheer.
Thanks so much for listening to the PS Let's Talk Love podcast.
We want to send out a special thank you to Medium Build for our show music.
And if you enjoy this podcast, follow us anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you want to support us, it's super helpful if you could give us a 5-star rating and leave us a review sharing what you're loving right now. Really, we want to know.
And if you don't like it and you got this far, don't worry. You do not have to listen to us again. You can just forget this podcast exists and move along.
You can catch up with us on Instagram at ps.welovelove or follow us on TikTok at psconsulting.
If you're interested in private coaching or learning more about our online classes, go to pscurators.com to learn more and find free resources to support you.
See you next time.